previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
My best to Kim. And
thanks. And you guys stay tuned. So and then let me just also add, and I don't know who thanks goes to for this, whether it's Eric or Bonnie or Matt, but I'm loving the PTI stuff you guys have been throwing out on social media. I don't know if you've mentioned that on the podcast, but it's out there.
Oh, yeah, that's been fun. All right, thank you.
And Gary,
take care, guys.
Gary, before I let you go, do you want me to pick you up and go to the water park today or not?
Would love that.
Great.
Thanks,
great.
Guys.
All right.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Well, if the Tony Kornheiser Show is on, we should put Mr. Tony on.
Well, I don't hear a thing. I'm doing this from my house. Nigel is in the studio. This is the third or fourth time we have tried this. I don't hear any of the rejoins. I don't hear any of the music. I had a lot of trouble hearing Richard Justice the other day. Nigel said he would fix it. Sally Jenkins is going to join us in a minute. I don't know that it's fixed. I don't really hear, and if I can't hear, we can't do the show. But I will say that I was walking the dog yesterday, because that's all I do is walk the dog. I leave my house to walk the dog, and the dog is tired of being walked, basically. The dog's upstairs now, doesn't want to have anything to do with me. But a guy comes by on a bicycle, and he says, "I'm listening to you right now." I go, "Oh, how is it?" And he goes, "Were you talking with Richard Justice?" And I said, "You know, I couldn't hear him." He says, "Well, I can hear him, so it doesn't really matter that you couldn't hear him." And it's a day later, so don't worry about it. So we're going to try this thing right now with Sally Jenkins. And the truth of the matter is, when I say it's a day later, I have lost track of time. It is obvious to me that the time in my life was always set by the routine in my life and was set by a sports calendar. I mean, I understood that there'd be a game on Sunday and a game on Saturday and a game on Monday night. I mean, I got all of that. And so when the games were, was how I knew what day it was. I've totally lost track of what day it is, probably because I cannot watch television. I cannot watch news. It's very bleak and depressing for me personally. So I don't watch anything, and I'm pretty much of a hermit. And Sally has known me a long time and knows that I am pretty much of a hermit almost all the time. Let's start with this. You were 100% right. 100% right about the Olympics. I don't know that you feel gratified that they postponed it, but I know that you feel it was the right decision. And you wrote a column today, and most of the time you're very, very critical of the heads of Olympics, you know, the sort of bureaucracy of Olympics. But in this column, you said, let's give them credit for what they did. What are your overall thoughts about postponing the Olympics?
Well, it was the right thing to do. It was the inevitable thing to do. I give them credit for doing it sooner rather than later. They had done a lot of hemming and hawing about canceling it, you know, maybe a month from now. They wanted more time, I think probably to work out some insurance issues. And they finally, they did the right thing for the athletes sooner rather than later. You know, another month of having athletes trying to train and potentially getting sick, you know, that was a really dangerous situation.
It's interesting. I know your feelings about Olympic bureaucrats, particularly with regard to the terrible, terrible things that happen with gymnastics. But I've always sensed you like the Olympics. Tell me you actually like the Olympics themselves.
I love the Olympics themselves because, you know, there's all this corruption around these gigantic, you know, world sports events. You know, the World Cup, FIFA, the IOC has a long history of, you know, rake-offs and corrupt deals and stuff. And then the Olympics games themselves start, and these great athletes come in, and they wipe away all the dirt and all the grime. And it's almost a purifying experience, you know. So I love the Olympics. They redeem the entire, you know, lousy, corrupt deal.
I may be wrong on this because I haven't followed it with intensity, but it does seem to me that the Prime Minister of Japan played a very big role in this, that he appeared to be in the background pushing for a postponement, and that I guess they listened to him. And if this is true, I find it instructive that somebody in the political world, which we don't necessarily have in this country, somebody in the political world grasped the reality better than people who were involved in the sporting world.
Well, one reality that I think they grasped was contractually, you know, the Olympics couldn't be postponed without the Tokyo organizers' consent or the IOC consent. They had a contract in place. They also have insurance to cover things like natural disasters. that insurance was a big issue, apparently, in the going back and forth negotiations between Tokyo and the IOC over whether to postpone, how to postpone, and, you know, what to do about this. And I think the reality sank in that you might be courting more liability by hosting the games than by postponing them. So, in other words, you know, what's your liability exposure if you go on and you host the, some kind of weird truncated version of the Olympics this July, and thousands of people become infected by coronavirus because they took your word that it was safe? You know, that was an unsustainable situation as well. And so, you know, you had two really, really lousy scenarios, and they had to pick the worst, I mean, the least bad scenario, which was postponement.
It seemed to me that a major player in this, and this could be just xenophobia on my part, but it seemed to me a major player in this was NBC, because the money for the rights fees in the United States probably is the largest single chunk of cash out there. And NBC always sort of seemed okay with this, or you know, with a postponement, or am I misreading that?
Well, it's hard to know what Comcast was doing behind the scenes. You know, Comcast, the owner of NBC, I think their stake in this was about $5 billion. The rights fees themselves that they paid was, I think, around $2.5 billion, if I'm not mistaken. And then on top of that, they sold another probably $2.5 billion in advertising. I'm not positive of my figures, but I think those are close to being right. But at any rate, the point being, the advertising money will now, they'll have to give it back, at least temporarily, because, or find some way to hold it. You know, people paid for something they're not getting this July. You know, all these companies paid big, big coin to advertise at peak hours of Olympic coverage on NBC, and now they're not going to get that. They're not going to get that advertising, and they're going to need their money because a lot of these companies are in trouble now. So, you know, what's that scenario going to look like? So, you know, NBC has insurance as well. They may have been more comfortable than the IOC or the Tokyo organizers. I don't know, but they've been very, very quiet, uncharacteristically quiet, and maybe because they didn't want to be seen as influencing or tilting a decision one way or the other, again, for, you know, insurance reasons.
I understand that. Let me get to the athletes. I watched Michael Phelps on TV this morning. I noticed that Ryan Lochte, because you can't have an Olympics without Ryan Lochte, he'll be swimming when he's 80, has committed already to 2021. But athletes were in training. I saw Lolo Jones say they weren't being drug tested as well. Michael Phelps talked about the training. I'm not an athlete. You know, it's a year out. They swim in the Olympics, and then the next year they compete. I just don't want to leave it with swimming. They compete in the Olympics one year. They compete in the World Championships the next year. I find it hard to have enormous sympathy for the athletes involved, because I simply believe that it is so much better to do it next year than to do it this year, and I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, you know, athletes are weird, obsessive, compulsive creatures. You know that. They're slaves to schedule. They're slaves to routine. So, yeah, they're not going to like this. It throws them off. You know, they're such creatures of minute repetition. And so, you know, they're predictably neurotic, all of them, about this. But, you know, the other thing that's probably upsetting for them is, you know, they put a lot of their lives on hold to plan for an Olympics, you know, not just 1 year out, 2 and 3 years out. They don't get married. They don't have babies. They don't finish college. They take years off from school. They suspend their lives to a really, really significant degree. So I do sympathize with that. I sympathize with their long-term planning for their educations or their families, or you know, any other number of scenarios have been blown to bits.
And I grant all of that, but they are professional athletes at this point. Whether they get paid or not, they've committed to being professional athletes. So I guess you just do it the next year. I would have particular sympathy if somebody had reached an age where they could not do it again. But in the main, I think they're pros, or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I mean, some of them are. I mean, collegiate fencers aren't necessarily the most professional, you know, organisms on the face of the earth. There's a lot of athletes who compete in the Olympics who that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, ping pongers and, you know, badmintoners and people like that, college wrestlers, you know, you think about them and not necessarily as sort of the most sophisticated pros. But generally speaking, look, everyone's going to be in the same boat. It's a level playing field.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Everyone's getting messed up here. It's not just you. And they have to get their head, they got to get their attitudes right about that. I mean, this is happening to the entire globe. This is not your personal drama. You know, get out of that mindset, you know, and look around for ways to help.
Let's talk about you personally. Where are you physically? New York City seems to be ground zero, at least in the last couple of weeks, for coronavirus. Where are you?
I'm out on Long Island where I live, and the Manhattanites are coming to try to kill me.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that there's a certain... Look, I'm always anxious, always nervous, but I would imagine that there is a sense of fear, right?
Well, yeah, there's a sense of fear in people coming out from the city, but also a sense of pretty large entitlement. You know, they pay a lot of money for their second homes out here, for their rental houses, and they come out and they buy all the groceries and they handle all the cantaloupe without thinking about their neighbor, you know. I mean, it's pretty, it can be pretty gross, but we're lucky. You know, we got fresh air and a beach nearby, and yeah, the dog is tired of being walked. The dog is very tired.
What's your day like? My day is... It's not that it's terrible. It's like everybody else's day who is working or working from home or whatever. But the basically what I do is walk the dog.
Look, Tony, I try to have one rule in this house during coronavirus. You have to change your clothes sometime before dinner.
Okay. It's all right. I also wanted to tell you that we're going back a week and a half. I really enjoyed the horse column, and I called our mutual friend David Israel that day, and I said, "Did Sally talk to you?" And he said, "Only about 30,000 words of emails,"
yeah.
And it made me smile. It made me so happy that you would have talked to David about that piece.
Hey, you know what? You gave me the best advice of any teacher or any professor I ever had about this job. You said you're only as smart as the people you talk to. And I've lived by that as a columnist, and it came straight from Tony Kornheiser. I mean, you know, I can't dream things up out of my own head. I have to go to smart people and ask them, what's the right thing to say here, or what do you think about this? And then I let them kind of drive what lands on the page in my voice. But, David Israel,
I used to do that, too. I mean, I never walked into a column without going to people that I considered smarter than I and say, what do you think about this? I mean, I was never a right-at-home person. I mean, in those days, you know, pre-internet days, but even now, I wouldn't be a right-at-home person as much as I would sort of reach out to somebody and say, help me out with this. Is this fuzzy thinking? Am I missing something here?
Well, I mean, I grew up watching you do that in the newsroom at the Post. Like, you know, I would come hang out in your office, and you'd be on the phone with Jim Valvano, you know, or Larry Brown. I mean, you know, you had not only smart people, you had people who were really in it, doing it, and I don't necessarily have as many of those people as you did, but I'm trying to cultivate them. But it matters, you know, it really matters. It helps you, you can be wrong a lot in this job, obviously, right? You can end up looking like a real idiot, but, you know, if you're talking to people who are on the court, who are on the field, and you don't necessarily have to quote them verbatim, but if they're just informing what you're writing, you have a better chance, you know, you raise your odds of being a little smarter.
Totally agree. Sal, thank you so very much. Stay healthy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. You too.
Treat. It's always a treat. Treat to talk to her. Treat to her. You all don't get to talk to her. I do, but you can read her. She's a fabulous columnist, and she was 100% right on the Olympics. We will take a break. If I can hear Michael Wilbon, we will talk to Michael Wilbon when we return. And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
And now it's the first of the live reads. I'm excited. Which one do we have?
Oh, we're going to do Malcolm Gladwell. This episode of The Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you by the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell, who I used to work with at The Post, who Sally worked with at The Post, who probably now wouldn't even talk to us. Produced by the team behind Revisionist History, Go and See is a six-part series focused on Lexus and the philosophy of Genchi Genbutsu, which means go and see for yourself, an idea that stems from the belief that if you experience something yourself, you have a better understanding of people and how to create something for them. In the series, Lexis invites Gladwell to Japan to discover their unconventional thinking and processes firsthand. Find out how a Japanese tea ceremony influenced the engineering of a car window, how the sound of an engine is tuned like a musical composition to elicit certain emotions, how understanding samurai warriors' eyes led to a suspension innovation. Gladwell learns that no detail is left behind and that a car company can learn more about cars by studying people. So go inside Lexus's headquarters in Japan, ride along on a top-secret test track with a master driver, sit in the expertly designed seat that actually lowers to welcome you into the vehicle. Follow Gladwell on his journey wherever you like to listen. It's all out there now. You can get it. Visit Lexus.com/curiosity for more stories like these.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, we'll get to Mr. Tony in a second, but the song bringing us back right now is sent to us by Haley Slaughter, who is the rugby ref, who is a traveler to Ireland. I think she lives in Florida. Sent us another song. Says, "Hey, Tony, thanks for playing my song the other week. Sadly, in order to be a responsible citizen, I had to cancel my gig that I told you about. As much as I enjoy playing music for people, I felt it was the right thing to do, so maybe this song gets played instead. It's called If You Don't Mind. Take care of yourselves. Slauncha, Haley Slaughter."
And here's, you know, all I can say is I can't hear the rejoin, but I remember her song before, and I know she's terrific.
Oh, it's lovely.
We will continue to play this music as we attempt to do this show from different locales. Michael Wilbon joins us now. Wilbon is in Arizona. Arizona is less densely populated, and it doesn't have a day like today in Washington, D.C., where at 8 in the morning, it's 45 degrees and rainy and awful. You get better days than that. What is the typical day in Arizona, and what are the restrictions in Arizona in terms of congregation and food and stuff like that?
Well, Tony, I think it's largely the same now. There's been criticism, pressure, if you will, coming from within some places in the state who want the governor to sort of, you know, be stricter and shut it down, and not necessarily, you know, have the San Francisco, the counties in California, Northern California, where people have been like that for like, I don't know, a couple of weeks now. That has not been the case here. I think last night when I checked, there have been 3 or 4 deaths, and God knows any deaths are too many due to coronavirus. But it has been different. The typical day in terms of weather, Tony, it's a transitional time. I mean, last week there were some days in the, I don't know, upper 50s, and there was some rain as well a couple of days. It's a transition time, though. So yesterday was 75 and sunny. It's supposed to be 80 next week, in the 80s every day and sunny. So that we're going to get to the weather that is sort of stereotypic of Arizona for a large part of the year. But, you know, March can be a little dicey. But golf courses are open, I'm not going to say all of them, because I certainly play at one that is not open right now, but a lot of clubs are open. People are taking hikes. They've gone to great lengths to make sure to say, the trails and the hiking paths that people just come to rely on here are still open. And so it's a little different because, Tony, you mentioned density. I mean, in terms of, you know, social distancing, that's a huge factor. But apparently, so is density, if you look at the states that have a bigger issue that we know of with Corona 19, that's something as well. So it's a little different here. I mean, you can go and see cars in a parking lot. Doesn't mean restaurants are open to go sit in, but people take it out. They also can maybe take it out and sit at the restaurant. They have outdoor seating. So it's a little different here, but there's also pressure coming from within the state in some quarters to shut it down more. And so we'll see where that's going.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I understand that mayors and governors have got to put local policies in place. Arizona is an interesting state in the sense that a lot of people have retired to Arizona. I would imagine the median population is pretty high in Arizona, and a lot of people my age in Arizona, and they may be feeling a little bit more nervous than others. Although
yes.
Recently it just seems that anybody can get this, which is different than what they told us at the beginning.
It is, Tony. It is different. And they talked about the sort of the average age lately. And it was interesting the other night when it was like 41%, I noticed, and I don't know if this was, might have been in Arizona, 41% of the cases being reported a couple of days ago were sort of under 40. They were, they were 21 to 40. It's like, okay, that was not, and then 41% over, that was not the case, you know, 10, 12 days ago. But it seems to be now, of course, you're right about the population, but you're also, Tony, you've got a different dynamic too, in that you don't see, you don't have a situation where younger people can congregate, because you don't have that many younger people. You know, this is not like New York or even Maryland when it comes to that sort of dynamic. So it's different. I don't know. I don't want to overstate it. And God knows, you know, I mean, people are still, you can do things here and it's easier to maintain. Let me put it this way. Should be easier to maintain social distancing, but I don't think anybody wants to take it for granted.
Yeah. So I should tell people, if they don't know, that we are back on television. We spent a week on the Zoom and having our family members film us on iPhones, and now we're back on actual television. Our show is best when we're together, but it's also good enough when we're not, and we're not going to be together, obviously, for quite some time. I'm in my attic, and Mike is in a studio in Arizona. I'm okay with this. It feels a little awkward, but I'm okay with this, and I wonder how you feel about it.
About the same, Tony. Everything's awkward. Nothing's the same. Nothing is as it was. So few things. Nothing is what we're accustomed to. That's the world we live in now, for the most part, for the last month, and we don't know how many months going forward. So, yeah, it's not the same, but what is the same? What part of our daily lives are the same right now?
No, it's not. But yesterday, we had three really good stories. We had Tom Brady and the criticism from Terry Bradshaw. We had Cam Newton being cut by the only team he ever played for, where he won an MVP and went to the Super Bowl. And we had this ridiculous little video for Tua Tagovailoa. And so, like, it almost felt like we were doing the show because those were good stories. We're going to be story dependent because of the distance, don't you think?
Because the story dependent because the distance between the two of us being 2,000.
If we're together in a studio, we can make any bad story work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. Man, we're not gonna have that many great stories, though. Look, even the free agency in the NFL, which has carried the day for everybody for the last 2 weeks.
It's going to run out.
It's going to run out. And so I don't know how many stories. I mean, the interesting story I find today, and maybe you've talked about it already, the general managers, don't want to hold the NFL draft.
And the NFL says, we don't care what you say. The
NFL says, you're going to do it. Shut up. So,
yeah, well,
there's a certain number there's not that many. And I think we're going to, and look, one of them was one of the big stories, Tony, we knew was coming, and you and I felt this way from the beginning, was the Olympics. I mean, you and I thought, 2 weeks ago, when this became really serious everywhere in America, that the Olympics were going to go away for a while. And they are, for a year, at least. I mean, I don't think it's going to be 2 years, but who the hell knows? It could be 22. It could be 22 and not 21. But, we're not going to have that many great stories, and so it's going to be interesting. And particularly, Tony, for those of us who believe if there are sports that come back in any form that we know it as, I think we're talking about July, August. That's a long time.
It really
That's
is.
Four
what
months.
Do you think comes back first?
Well, I mean, Tony, it's going to be, people are going to be scared. I mean, governing bodies, commissioners are going to be scared to come back, although there's going to be pressure from within, pressure from their own owners to get moving about the business that they're in. And so, I don't know, I guess the NHL and NBA, I guess, it would seem to me that golf could come back sooner. You and I have said that.
Wingfoot shut down, and now there's, I mean, the Masters is out, the PGA is out, or at least postponed. If Wingfoot shuts down, there's reason to believe that the U.S. Open, which is usually the third week in June, that that's going to be out.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, again, postponed.
Right.
You know, some but things will probably, if there's any sort of order to a return, if we are that lucky to have the return of that part of life, I think there's going to be a smattering, and then I think, you know, it's going to be all at once. God only knows if we are lucky enough to see a flattening, to see a reduction. What are we talking about? August, September, like we've never seen in terms of what can be contested, what can
be
played, can people return to stand?
Sports explosion of our lives.
Yeah,
like everything would be on. Everything.
We can hope. I mean, I think that's what we're hoping for now, but. You know, this notion that we're going to see stuff in May. Tony, I just don't see that.
I agree with you. I don't. I'm watching. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I try to look at ESPN every once in a while to find out if there's a story out there that I've missed that we're going to sort of talk about later in the day. And so many people have now cameras in their homes. So many people are separated, totally separated. It is. I don't know how you feel about this. It is so odd looking to me. It really is.
I don't think I don't find it that way for me, because so many people already are into Skype and FaceTime and things that I don't do.
Right.
They're into it, and so we notice it. Look, first of all, there is more of it. There's a lot of it. It's like it's almost exclusive. Not many people are going to a studio like I am. I'm still going to Sneaky Big here in North Scottsdale. Far more people have equipment now, technology in their homes. And that may happen with me as well. But, you know, a lot of this has been used to a lesser degree already, which is why people know about it. I mean, Zoom has been around. You and I are not,
never heard of it,
you know, on the cutting edge of that sort of technology. We haven't been. We are now. You have something in your home now. And
my wife, she knows how to do
it. You know, it's...
I don't know how to do it. So this is, I should tell people this. Yesterday, Wilbon and I yesterday were doing the show, and at one point they say, Tony's microphone just went out. It's out. We can't hear him. I could see you. I could hear you. You couldn't hear me. Mike Foss, who is basically in charge of all sort of on-site things for ESPN, was in my house, and he fixed it. There is no chance on earth that if this happens again and I'm here alone, that I can fix it. I can't fix anything. If you have it in your
house, I can't either, Tony.
You can't fix it.
No, that's why when the choices were presented to me, and luckily one of them was, okay, and Sneaky Big, the Bob Parsons studio, for people who know, you know, think about golf, Bob Parsons is PXG, Parsons Extreme Golf, PXG. And so when that was mentioned to me, I was like, yep, that's it. And part of it's Tony just knowing Bob Parsons a little bit and knowing how the bar was going to be. There's a nurse at the front door of my
God,
of the studio.
I wish I had a nurse here.
A nurse. So for people who think, oh, Wilbon's not in his house, he's being irresponsible. No, because I don't have a nurse at the front door of my home. I can tell you that.
I don't even have Nick Nurse. We have nothing.
And
if anything, I'm serious. People need to know this. If all of a sudden they say, well, what happened to the rest of PTI? It's that I can't fix anything. That's not. I didn't go to the Columbia Broadcasting School of fixing equipment.
Yeah, Tony, you'd have tinkered with the microphone until you got it going. Yeah, so I feel, you know, very fortunate. And, you know, there's like, one person, two people in the studio, that's it. And we're way more than 6 feet apart. We're like, you know, I don't know, 15 feet, 12 feet. And so we're doing that, and I'm grateful that it's that way. Because, you know, Tony, I don't know what I'm doing either. I know I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And
how
so,
I feel. All right, I'll talk to you later.
You know,
I'll be in my attic, and you'll be in
sounds good. Be well.
Michael,
stay well.
On, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Tori Clark will join us when we return as we try to make do. I've said to people I couldn't hear Richard Justice the other day. I had difficulty hearing Sally. No difficulty, Nigel, at all in hearing Wilbon.
No.
No difficulty.
Well, that's good.
Until who knows why, right?
I fixed it, right?
You must have fixed it. All right, we'll take a break. Tori, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And now it's time for live read number two.
Vincero.
Oh, Vincero.
I got a Vincero watch right in front of me right now. I write down the time when I start a segment so I have some sense of how long we're going to go. And this week we are partnering with Vincero Watches, and we could not be more excited. Finding a watch that's stylish, bold, and built to last can cost a pretty penny. Vincero Watches is changing that. They believe you deserve to look good no matter your budget. Vincero creates exceptionally crafted watches, and they do it without breaking the bank. Regardless of whatever situation I'm in, whether at work or outside of work, I do my best to always wear a watch. And why? Because every guy needs a watch. I know some of you use your phones. You're stupid. Wear a watch. It's good. The guys over on their team sent us some watches, and they're stunning. I've got this watch with a sort of an almost black face to it and copper numbers and, you know, copper watch hands. I really like it. From dress watches to action watches, Vincero has a timepiece for every style, occasion, and price point. There's a reason they have over 20,000 five-star reviews, and it's because their modern watches will make you look good and feel good. They're offering you, as a listener to this high-quality podcast, an exclusive 15% discount off your entire order, and they're going to cover all the shipping costs if you use the code TONY. Most of you have less to do today than you had, say, 3 weeks ago. So you can go to their website. You can look at their watches and buy one. The deal's really too good to pass up. Get the year started the right way. Well, the year's been started. And it's been started actually the wrong way with coronavirus.
Yeah.
So try this. Go to Vincero, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Use my discount code, Tony, for a discount at checkout. Use the code, people. Do not pay full price on these beautiful timepieces. Use the code TONY at checkout. VinceroWatches.com.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, I know Tony can't hear this right now.
Can't hear it.
But this is a nice email, a beautiful song written to us by Matt Citron. Says, hey, Uncle Tony, you were kind enough to play my song Wisteria on your show a few weeks ago, as forwarded by my friend Bernardo. I have a new single out called Down. Bernardo tells me this be made more up your alley. It's more rocking with the beat. Hope you guys can find a place for it. Thanks again. I love the show and stay safe. Matt. So it's lovely.
So what I'm going to do eventually is I'm going to go back and listen to the shows and listen to the music because it's probably the best, certainly better than me talking. And Nigel, tell people how they can send music in.
Oh, yeah, send us a song to jingles@tonycornhisershow.com. Please make sure it's your song or you're part of a band that said it. Don't send us in something from you too, because we can't play that unless we have the artist's permission. And send it to jingles@tonycornhisershow.com.
So people who listen to the show know that almost always I say to Michael, Michael, tell people how they can send the music in. And then, Michael, is there anything we're selling? Michael is in South Carolina with Liz and the boys at Chan and Moni's and practicing social distancing, I'm sure, because it's less dense population in South Carolina. Michael, at some point, will listen to this, I hope, and I trust that he and his family and all the people down there are safe and well. As I feel about Tori Clark, where are you and what have you been doing?
Hi, Mr. Tony and Nigel. Great to hear your voices. Right now, we're in Sperryville, Virginia, which, as you guys know, is about 50, 60 miles southwest of D.C., and we're very, very, very lucky to be able to come here because we can go out and go on walks and go on hikes by ourselves and with the dogs. And so it's perfectly lovely. We are hunkered down. Brian and I are hunkered down with 2 out of 3 kids, 1 girlfriend, 3 dogs, and massive amounts of beer purchased at Calvert Woodley.
So this is interesting to me because I know that your kids are all, you know, in their 20s at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And I wondered how many would be out there and what the, you know, what the dynamic would be having a whole bunch of younger people who, by and large, seem not to respect the threat of the coronavirus as much as anybody older. What have you told your kids, and what are they doing?
Well, interesting, 2 out of 3 kids do not follow that stereotype, and I can now name them, Colin and Devin. The other one, Charlie, who is still up in Ann Arbor, University of Michigan, until recently was one of those people, you know, going to the bars, things like
yeah.
that. Unfortunately, the governor about a week ago shut it down. So he and his buddies are holed up in their house, which was a petri dish before this. So I can't imagine what it's like now. And here, Devin and Colin and Brian and I, we have a routine. We get up pretty early in the morning. We take care of the dogs. People sit down and go to work. We have quiet spaces, and people go to work. Devin's still got online classes. She's a senior at Syracuse. And then we take some breaks, and we are very, very fortunate. We're out here on 25 acres by ourselves, so we've got a lot of space to roam, which is really wonderful. We're eating much healthier. We were big on going out to dinner, ordering takeout, and we're doing a lot of cooking, which is good, so that's good for our health. The massive amounts of beer drinking is probably not so good for us. And we check in with each other every once in a while and say, okay, how's it going? How's it working? We decided week two, because this particular group has been together for 8-9 days now,
yeah,
and we've decided this week we need to back off the drinking and not pretend that it's a holiday.
I find that I put on the news, and in a very short amount of time, I get off the news. I try to go to ESPN, but there's nothing in sports, really. I haven't watched movies. I haven't watched series. I think I've closed myself off as much as possible to the outside world, even though I do a lot of walking with the dog, and I'm happy to see people walk by me. But in terms of bombardment from the outside world, I've shut myself off to that, and I wonder if you have in any way.
I have, and it's been in the last few days. So first thing in the morning, I'll check the news via Twitter and other things. I might turn on the very top of the Today Show,
yeah,
and then I'm done. And every day, and this is such a weird one for me, and you guys have heard me talk about this before. We have faced times of trouble before, as a country, as a world, and usually when we face times of trouble, we all come together, right? And one of the bright spots is you can get together and you have potluck dinners with your neighbors during Snowmageddon, and you get all the kids together to do different things. And in this case, we can't do it. Sure, we have Facebook and we have Zoom and we have all these things, but it's not the same. So at the very time I want a lot of people around me and shared experiences, we can't do that because of social distancing. And I personally find that very sad. And I also personally find, and I'm a news junkie, a little bit of it goes a long way because there's no good news right now. There's very, very little good news.
So we talked to Jeannie last week, and she had discovered Zoom. And she was having cocktail parties with a bunch of friends. And they might have like 10, 12, 14 faces on their computer screens. Have you talked to friends? You're avoiding stores, I take it. Have you talked to friends? Have you set up any of those sorts of things? I don't do that.
Reached out to lots of people, lots of friends and relatives, those kinds of things, just to check in on them, and then find myself reaching out more to people I haven't talked to in a long time. And there is someone from my high school class who has said we didn't have that big a class. We had about 75 people. So there might be a high school reunion via Zoom, which could be pretty spectacular. And we did, cheap plug for Chatter on Books, we did Chatter on Books the other night via Skype, which worked great. It absolutely worked great. We had 5 or 6 different people in different places, and it worked really well. So
technology is
helping.
Half the time I can't hear who I'm talking to. I really
can't. Just keep talking. It works.
Here's what I want to add. This is the one of the things I'm very curious about, because I suspect this changes depending on your locale. People talk about essential businesses, and everybody sort of nods, essential businesses. Okay, sure, like a clothing store is probably not an essential business. But the other day, my dry cleaner is still open. And I ran to the dry cleaner because if I'm going to be on television, I got to get all the shirts back. I got to have shirts. I've got to be able not to wear the same thing all the time. And I talked to the dry cleaner, it's Chevy Chase Valet, and I talked to him about it, and he said that in California, as one might suspect, dry cleaners are essential businesses. In Sperryville, are there things that you think are essential businesses that back in D.C. are not?
Well, there's no dry cleaner here. In
right.
Rappahannock County, we are very happy to say there are no chain stores, there are no traffic lights, there's no neon, there's none of that. And Sperryville consists of a corner store, which is food, and people do. It's the only food store around for miles and miles and miles. So it is open. People are very respectful, tend to go in one at a time and socially distance from the people around you. A couple of the local places are doing takeout. Three Blacksmiths, which is now a literally world-famous restaurant, is closed, but they're doing takeout. So you have things like that, which is very helpful. And there, people really do try to help one another. There's a wonderful woman out here who's a florist, and she's a really good florist, but she thought the responsible thing to do was to shut down for both pickups and deliveries. But you get a gift certificate, and you can use it a couple months from now. But the hardware store, and it's more of a hardware store, it's for all the farmers and people out here who need equipment on a daily basis to take care of their cattle and take care of their crops that they're trying to grow. That's open.
That's essential for
them.
Yeah,
that's essential. I don't get how a dry cleaner is essential. I don't want to hurt their business.
Well, in California, it's essential because so many people are in the movie business. And they've got to have clothing. They've got to have wardrobe. I mean, I understand it. I'm glad he was open. I might not define that as essential, but there are certain things that are open that we all understand. Banks have to be open, and grocery stores have to be open,
yeah,
and gas stations have to be open. Liquor stores have to be open. There's no.
They don't have to be open, but boy, I'll tell you what. If you're in that business right now, it's not.
Yeah,
bad.
They're doing great. Let me tap into. The career that you had a long time ago, the political career. What is the effect of this? We're in an election year. It's not that far away. What is the effect of this virus, which has shut down everything and to a very large degree shut down politics? I was infuriated the other day that it took 3 days to pass this relief bill. What are you people talking about? Sit down and don't leave the table until it's done. What's the effect on politics?
Well, first of all, let's back up and talk about career choices. How smart were you to get out of the restaurant business about 9 months ago?
Yeah. It
Brilliant.
Was not my choice, but
Brilliant.
It turned out to be good. I would have gone bankrupt a few months later, that's all. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. One of the reasons I turn the news off and don't absorb that much is because Congress and the White House are driving me insane. And I'm sure it's driving everybody else insane for exactly what you said. What do you mean you're going home for the night? No, you don't go home for the night. And I think, and I hope, and I have fingers and toes crossed when I say this. You hear some people when they're talking about what does this mean and what are the long-term consequences. And people say we as a country, we as a world, we as people will come out of this differently than we went into it. And I am hopeful that one of the things coming out of this is when people do go to their polling places in the fall and in years from now, they'll say, who gets the job done? Right? Not who gives a fancy speech, not who can gin people up on social media, but who's getting the effing job done. And if you look in the last 2 weeks, who are the heroes? The heroes are the grocery workers and the first responders and those people, but the heroes in the political public sector are the governors of the cities. They're done. What?
Hold on.
That's what.
Tori, stand in one spot. Your phone's breaking up.
Up.
Are you there?
I'm standing in one spot. Oh, yeah, I'm not moving.
No, go ahead. Talk about the political heroes, because that's important.
Yeah, well, I hope the political heroes, I hope the people we elect and re-elect are those that are getting the stuff done that people really need. So I hope people will turn to the governors. And not to play favorites, but Cuomo has been awesome. Larry Hogan has been awesome. Awesome.
No, it's governors and it's mayors.
Yeah.
Because they live in the spot where it's going on.
Yeah, and even at a very local level. Out here in Rappahannock County, you see the local officials doing whatever they can. And if that's ramping up volunteers at the food pantry, they do that. Those are the kinds of people you want in these jobs.
100%. Tori, stay healthy with all the people
you
out
too,
there,
guys.
And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Tori.
We miss you. Bye.
Bye. Tori Clark, boys and girls. That sound began to fade about halfway through for me. How about, did you hear it, Nigel?
I did. No, it was just the very end when she was talking about the governors that just got, the phone got very spotty right there. So.
Yeah.
Sperryville.
But she's right, though.
No, she absolutely is.
100% right.
I hope people.
All right, we will take a break. Are we going to come back with email? What are we coming back with?
Yes, coming back with email. I believe I dropped those off to you. So we'll come back.
I got them.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
But before the email, I believe we have our third live read today.
Yeah, bespoke post. If your mailbox is anything like mine, 90% of the time, it's a fairly depressing place. 95% of the time. Political flyers, utility bills, unholy amounts of coupons. But once a month, I do have a reason to be stoked, and that's because of my box of awesome from Bespoke Post. Bespoke Post sends guys only the best stuff every month, and no matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, and outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has carefully built collections for every part of your life. I think Michael steals them all the time. But Nigel, you've gotten some stuff that's very good, right?
Oh, I've gotten some great stuff. Michael has sent it my way. I got the Scrimshaw kit, which I haven't really used as much as you might think I might have, but it's lovely. And I've also got these great whiskey glasses. So, no, it's just everything that they send you is just fantastic.
It's really good. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up. It's not free, but it's free to sign up. And you can skip a month or cancel any time. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. You can get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and you enter the code Tony at checkout. Once again, that's boxofawesome.com, code Tony, and use the code, people, for 20% off your first box.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Get your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Mr. Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of your folks.
Thank you, Darius. Always great hearing from you. And before I turn it over to Mr. Tony for the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Danny and the gang from Bethesda Bagels for providing us with our meals today. And if they're still open, take out, one person allowed in there at a time, but head in on there to Bethesda Bagels.
Very grateful for that. That'll do it for us today. This is a great one to read. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank our special sponsor, Ned Ryerson's Insurance. You remember, so funny. You remember Ned, right? He won the talent show with his whistling belly button trick. Bing. He got the shingles real bad senior year, almost didn't graduate. Bing. He dated your sister a couple of times before you made him stop. Bing. It's great. It's great. Such a great movie. Let me also thank Michael Wilbon, Sally Jenkins, and Tori Clark. We're reaching out. That's the only way we can do this show, because we're not sitting together, is to reach out. And thanks as well to our real sponsors today, Vincero, Bespoke Post, and the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Here we go, from Cole Policy. Tony, Ron, whatever your name is, I want to thank you for recording a show. I've been working two jobs so my wife can stay home full-time with our small children. Tonight she came down with strep, wasn't able to get much done around the house once the kids went to bed. Upon my return from job number two at 10 p.m., I was greeted by about an hour's worth of dishes and laundry. Since job number one now has me working from home and my infant son doesn't understand the concept of load management, I figured these tasks had to be done before I went to bed. I opened the podcast app on my phone, pleasantly surprised to see what you and Nigel had graciously posted on an episode earlier that day. 45 minutes later, I had a better understanding of why Brady may be a buck in the air, and slightly more importantly, the chores were done. I know you get a lot out of doing the show, but trust me, the littles get more out of listening. Thank you, and may the next car parked illegally on your street at least be a Cadillac. From Bill Keister in Kensington, as if things could not get worse, Hallmark Channel has announced a Christmas movie marathon this weekend. 27 of their best original titles like Matchmaker Santa, Once Upon a Holiday, Marry Me at Christmas. But I hear they've already produced new movies in the past 2 weeks, such as Corona Christmas, Love in the Time of Corona, One Last Kiss Before Costco, The Corona Prince, Heartache and Lung Infections, Loving You from an Unsafe Distance, I Can't Isolate from You, Babe, I Love You, but Get Me Out of This House, Smiling from Behind the Face Mask, Love and Other Infectious Diseases, and my new favorite, Gazebos and Toilet Paper, a brilliant email. From Carl Shea and his wife Nancy, Carl age 71 and Nancy age 70. Giant Food in our area is now opening 6 to 7 a.m. for seniors. My wife and I can't get up that early, but since you've already awakened, could we ask you to pick us up a dozen eggs, a 6-ounce bottle of hand sanitizer, and 4 rolls of toilet paper? Our house is an easy walk from the Silver Spring Metro, and you'll pass Blair Mill Giant on the way. We'll leave a 20 under a red bocce ball in the bushes by the front door. Keep the change. From Patrick Tribus in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, catching up on my podcast, I had my first David Aldridge moment when you read a mailbag submission composed by no other than my ASU professor, Eddie Davila. Eddie and I have a strenuous relationship, as he told my girlfriend and friend at the time to shut up during class. Add salt to the wound, you and Saliza both found his email to be funny. I was hoping you would make a snide remark about his teaching skills to be lackluster, but then I remember my final grade being a C-. Not very good, but I wasn't the worst. Great email. From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. What do gamblers do at a time like this? The ones that are addicted must be on the verge of a breakdown. I suppose they can hang out at an airport and bet on arrivals like Kramer with that cowboy in the old Seinfeld episode. Or maybe they can kill two birds with one stone and bet on toilet paper and food delivery trucks at their local supermarkets. Maybe a segment with Kip or Chuck Todd on how to deal with a gambling absence is in order. From Patrick Patton in Hedgeville, West Virginia. Dear Mr. Tony, you're scared of COVID-19? What do you have to be scared of? Just hang out with Wendy Rieger, and if that virus even looks in your direction, she'll give it that I'll dog walk you stare, and the virus will run screaming. No one messes with Rieger.
It's true.
That's a very good email. How much time do we have to do?
You got about 30 seconds left.
All right, from Mike in Wilmington, North Carolina. Thank you for continuing to do the show. I look forward more than ever to listening like many of us littles. Last summer, my wife and I were able to get to chatter to see you guys live as well. When can we meet at your house for breakfast? My wife is a good chef. From Steve the Sycophant, which always makes me happy. Congratulations, Satchmo, on your brilliant marketing ploy for your PTI segment on SportsCenter. A poster of the cover of that epic compilation, I'm Back for More Cash, prominently displayed in your home. I checked Amazon Books during and after PTI. The book Move on the best-selling books ranking from 1,118,691 to 67,612. A few more shows, you'll be in the top 10,000. That makes me so happy. Mike Foss put that poster up, and everybody can see. And that's a book available.
Right.
All my other books are out of print. Are we done?
We are done.
Can I do one more?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is from an emergency room doctor, Matt McCarthy in New York City. I wanted to write you to say thank you. I want to reassure you that you're safe reading this email. They haven't proven the coronavirus is contagious through email yet. I'm an ER doctor working in New York City, working long, difficult hours these days as the crisis continues. It's a tough period, and I know it is going to go on for some time. I've been listening to your podcast for years, but lately I've been listening to it as I commute to and from the hospital for work. It is bringing me happiness to listen to it, and is one of the few things that manages to distract me from the stress at work. Hope you and your family are staying safe. These are the heroes, people.
Mm-hmm.
The ER people, the healthcare people, these are the heroes. If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
Who's your favorite pitcher?
Max Scherzer.
What does Max Scherzer do?
Phoenix.
Who's your favorite batter?
Soto.
Soto?